they buy your product for more money than a similar product for less. Why? Why should someone do it with you rather than the guy down the street? Why you? Why should they choose your company? Why your company? If you can't answer these questions immediately, rapidly, and with certainty, you will struggle because you're not convinced. If you were completely sold, you would have immediate responses to each of these. Become so thoroughly sold on your product that your conviction becomes irresistible to others. This is not meant to suggest that you lie to yourself, if that were even possible, because I don't think it is. I've personally met thousands of high-producing salespeople over the years and never met a top great producer who got to the top by lying and deceiving others, much less himself. See, what I'm suggesting is that you take the time to sell yourself so strongly and so deeply before you ever try to sell someone else. And you sell yourself on how your product, your service, your company, your ideas, your audition, your presentation is superior to every other. Overcoming the 90-day phenomenon. You know, this 90-day phenomenon is experienced in every career that I've ever seen. I've met many, many salespeople, actors, directors, entrepreneurs, business people, insurance people, doctors, lawyers, you name it. The career doesn't matter. I've met many people that tell me, hey, I started my career. It popped off hard. A salesman says I was selling a lot of product. I did well for 90 days. Bam! Something happened. Suddenly, I find myself unable to close a deal, to get it done. I'm getting tired. My enthusiasm's gone. What happened? See, management will tell you, particularly in sales, that the person has gotten lazy or that they've gotten too smart for their own good. Okay, let's take them one at a time. So he got lazy. But why? Why did he get lazy? He wasn't lazy 30 days ago or 60 days ago. Why? He wasn't exhibiting laziness for the first 30 days, and he couldn't have gotten too smart for his own good, folks, because look, he's only been on the job 90 days. Okay, you don't go from knowing nothing to genius in 90 days. Trust me, it could be fast, but not that fast. So what happened? Because it isn't lazy and it's not smart. We know he's not smart and he's not lazy. He's not winning. See, what I believe that happens to cause this 90-day phenomenon is that the individual was either being told to do something that wasn't aligned with his own personal standard of ethics, or he's trying to sell something that he's no longer completely sold on, which are kind of similar. Because if you're doing something that's against your own personal standards or ethics, then you're not sold on what you're doing. And if you have a product that you don't believe in completely, that's kind of against your own standards and ethics, you're not sold. See, maybe the individual, the 90-day wonder, maybe he has disagreements with the product or with management or the service or something he's promising. He's somehow refraining from doing something that he was doing the first 90 days. Something changed. Maybe he got some information about how the product doesn't really help people or how it doesn't do what they've been saying it does. Maybe he didn't close the deal and started wondering, hey, why didn't I close that deal? What happened to that deal? And then came up with the wrong reason, the wrong calculation, and then continued to use the wrong calculation, incorrect reasoning, and continue to get no results. See, this happens a great deal whereby salespeople come up with wrong answers. Actors come up with wrong reasons for not getting the audition. Man, that'd be scary if a pilot did that. We're going the wrong way. Let's adjust. Coming up with another wrong reason. You know, what if he didn't have a nav system? He'd be in trouble. He'd crash the plane. You get it? See, whatever it was that happened 90 days ago, he was a wonder, and now he's a blunder. The 90-day wonder is basically no longer sold. Actually, he is sold, just on something else. In fact, he's become so sold that it's a bad idea to sell his product, and starts not selling the product. You get it? He's sold so hard on the wrong way to do things that he's actually doing it and not getting results. Man, this is a problem. So he becomes sold that it's a bad idea to sell this product and starts not selling the product. See, not selling is also a form of selling, just in reverse. You get it? I didn't sell them. I convinced myself not to sell them. Because I no longer believe in my product, my service, or something. Am I selling? Sure, I convinced them not to buy it. Something has impacted the individual to the point where he's motivated not to sell rather than motivated to sell. Do you get it? Something went out in his thinking. And he's no longer convinced. Well, actually, he is convinced just again in reverse. When production drops, this is the first thing you should look for and rehabilitate. This individual must be revitalized and resold on the product, the company, the services, the ideas, the dreams, the mission. Go over all the ways that the product is superior and how it will benefit. I'm talking to management now and the individual. Go over all the ways that product is superior and how it will benefit. Find out if there's other disagreements or counterintentions or false information that has come into this person's mind about the product, the service, the idea, the dream, the company, that could be in conflict with this salesperson or individual's beliefs. Once you've handled that, ask him, hey, how do you feel about the product or service? When you were doing well, when things were going your way, how'd you feel about it? And rehabilitate that, and you will find this individual becomes motivated again, closing deals again. It's incredible how many salespeople tell me stories about the competitor that undersells them and practically gives the product away, or how the very product they sell can be bought on the internet for way less money. I recently read a book called Secrets of Successful Selling, different than my books. It's called The Secrets of Successful Selling, that talked about how competition had reached levels never seen and that customer awareness had reached a point that required salespeople to operate at levels never before considered. The book was written in 1952, which just goes to show that there's always been competition. There will always be competition. The problem isn't product knowledge. The problem is not competition. The problem is not a smarter customer. The real issue always has been and always will be. The real issue is whether or not you're fully sold on your product. Become so solidly sold, so convinced, so committed to your company, product, and service, your ideas and dreams, that you believe it would be actually a terrible thing for your prospect not to do business with you, or to do business anywhere else would be not only foolish, but almost criminal. Are you that sold on your product that you think it's detrimental, unethical, even criminal not to convince someone to buy your product? I doubt it. Sell yourself. Get to that point and watch your production freak out to another level. When a customer doesn't buy your product, do you feel bad? I mean, actually feel bad and lose sleep, feeling like you've screwed them over because they didn't buy it from you? See, if you were really sold, you would feel that way. You'd feel horrible. See, that's being sold. The person that is sold completely will not let people not buy because it would be a violation of their own integrity. Reach that level of being sold. Fanatical. Blow yourself up commitment. Unreasonable. And I assure you, people will buy your product, your service, your idea, your audition, and your dream. You might ask yourself, man, but what if I'm not convinced that I have the best product or service, or I'm the greatest? What if I'm not convinced? Then get convinced and do it immediately. You know, Muhammad Ali wasn't just convinced that he was the greatest. He also trained to be the greatest. But he scared the hell out of people before he ever went in the ring. He was sold. That cat was sold all the way. So you got to get convinced. You have to do it immediately. And then you need to do whatever it takes to further ensure that you believe that what you're offering is the greatest product, the greatest service, and you're the great one. Find the plus points. Sell yourself on those completely. Let's take an unhappily married man who wishes he had a better relationships, you know, as an example. Perhaps he's been paying attention to his wife, but he's lost some of his commitment and passion over the year. What happened? What happened? Dude, he was in at one point. What happened? See, he basically isn't sold anymore. This is about life now, not products, man. This is about something that really, really matters. He's got another 40 years with this woman. He's losing the sale to himself. What happened? At one time, he was completely sold on his wife. So sold, he suggested that they spend the rest of their lives together. But somewhere along the line, he stopped selling himself on that marriage, on that creation, on that partnership. Look, if you want your marriage to work better, you got to convince yourself you have the best spouse on planet Earth. Maybe in the entire universe, if there's other planets and other beings out there, I don't know. You got to be sold. How is your spouse the best? What sets him or her apart? What makes that person unique from any other human being on this planet? Why are you sold on them? Why should you be sold on them? Why were you sold at one time? Hey, she burns the dinner. She looks terrible in the morning. She's got big, ugly feet. I'm not asking you that. I'm not asking you for the negative, okay? I'm asking you why you are sold. Set the negative aside. Look at what sold you on her in the first place. Sell yourself again and over again. Find the plus points. Ignore the imperfections. Get back to being sold. and do the things you were doing early on and watch the change in you, not in her. Okay? She still looks terrible in the morning. She still burns dinner and she still got big ugly feet, cracking toenails. But you'll be amazed to see what happens with you. All of a sudden, she isn't burning meals later. Maybe she starts looking better to you in the mornings. Nothing's really changed except you. And now she's gone out and gotten a pedicure and a nice pair of shoes to cover up those big old feet of hers. Hey, look, get sold or be sold. Should you lie to yourself in order to be sold? Of course not. But look, you got to get yourself sold no matter what. Rather than lying to yourself, a better alternative is to do what any champion does. A champion decides to win the game with what they have to work with. They don't change teams. Oh, let me go to the other team. They're better. No, man. They commit. They're all in it to win it like Eisenman. They don't change teams, flip off, go to the other. They make the most of the assets and strengths available to them. They play the cards they have. They make the most of the pot. They don't lie to themselves. They convince themselves that the only solution is winning, and they commit to one outcome only. Success. Focus on winning whatever game you're playing in life. Sell yourself on what you need to do today to make today great, to make your relationships great, to make your neighborhood great, to make your life great, and to make the sale. Find every plus point, sell it, and sell you on it. David beat Goliath, not because he had any real chance of being able to, but because he sold himself on the fact that he had to. Did he lie to himself? I don't think he did. The outcome would say he did not. He became convinced that his survival depended on taking down the giant. This is what you must do. Get sold and committed to the fact that you're offering a superior product or superior service, or your company is superior, or you're superior. Look, man, the company, the product, and the service could be bad, but I'm superior to the degree that you got to do it with me. You've got to make it so true to yourself that you can say it to another with such conviction that no one would even think of challenging you. Put your money where your mouth is. You know, one time a real estate agent was trying to convince me that this particular investment that he was trying to sell me on was this great deal and a great opportunity. He kept going on and on and on about how fabulous an investment, how one of a kind of investment this property was. But I wasn't convinced because he didn't say it convincingly. I mean, he seemed like he was selling, but he wasn't sold himself. You know what I'm talking about? Just a pitch with nothing to follow it. This cat lacked the believability of someone who's thoroughly and completely sold on their product. Like any customer who is not sold, I start asking questions. It wasn't the deal that I was unsure about as much as the salesman who was pitching it. Something just didn't add up. I don't know whether it was the way he was dressed, how he pitched, how he presented, how he rushed, the loud talk, how he couldn't look at me, a combination. I don't know what it was exactly. But man, the cat wasn't sold. And if he's not sold, I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to wait. I'm going to shop. He sounded like a salesman. Mediocre, average, maybe even a professional, but not great. He sounded like a salesman, not someone who was a sold man. Not someone who was completely and securely confident about the product. Finally, I asked him, hey, have you invested in this product yourself? With a dumbfounded look on his face, he answered, oh, no, I haven't. You might be thinking that my question was unfair because maybe he can't afford the product he's selling. Look, if it's a sure thing, why wouldn't he pull all his money together with all his family, his kids, his parents, all his friends, and buy it himself? If it's a sure thing, you're not putting anyone at risk. If your product is great, then wouldn't it make sense that you'd be willing to buy it yourself? Now, remember, this is about being sold. The most important sale you'll ever make is the one you make to yourself. This right here is about put your money where your mouth is. By owning the product you're selling, you're demonstrating your certainty to others by your actions, not your words. And actions speak louder than words. That is the difference between a salesperson and someone who's completely sold. It's unbelievable to me. It just kills me how many people sell products that they don't own themselves. Every product I have ever sold in my life, I first bought myself and was proud to tell people that I owned it. Obviously, I couldn't, nor can you, buy every single product that you sell, but you have to be willing to buy that product that you present or offer. You have to be so sold that you use your product, you consume that product, and would sell that product to the people you love the most. Otherwise, you're just a mercenary salesperson and will be the mercenary sales guy for whatever the highest fee is. And that's not me, and I would expect that's not 99% of the people listening to this. My wife's an actress. And my advice to her, because I don't know anything about acting, is look, get sold on the part yourself. So sold yourself that you'd hire yourself. I consider myself one of the great salespeople. And I say that with humility, but also being unreasonable. I know that's true about me. I consider myself to be a great salesperson. That doesn't mean I could sell any product. To the degree you or I are in disagreement with the product or idea we're selling, we will not be able to sell that product. For example, you know the ice and the Eskimo thing? I couldn't sell ice to an Eskimo, as the saying goes. So if that's what it takes to be a great salesperson, hey, I can't do it. You know why? Because it wouldn't be ethical for me to sell ice to an Eskimo. There's no need. There's just no need. I couldn't and wouldn't sell psychiatric drugs of any kind, no matter how much money you paid me. Why? Because I could never convince myself that drugging people, that product that I'm selling, could possibly ever solve a person's problem or make a person's life better. I only believe that it would make them more unaware, more stuck in their problem. I just couldn't sell it. You sell it? Whatever. I couldn't sell it. I can sell only that which I am completely sold on all the benefits long term. You know, this guy in car dealerships, they're called the F&I guy or the finance and insurance salesman. He was having difficulty selling his products and he called our office and asked for advice on improving his sales. I began asking him, well, let me ask you, tell me about the last car you bought. And he's like, oh man, he got all excited. He said he'd recently purchased a car actually. And he went on to tell me how he loved this car. He absolutely loved it. He got all excited, enthusiastic. He said, you know, I was so sold on the car. I had to get one. And because he was so sold on that car, his conviction showed through. It became obvious he was sold. The product shine through him when he talked about it. He was speaking from his heart, his experience, what was true for him. I went on to ask him, well, which of the finance and insurance products did you purchase with the car you bought? You know, the credit life they offer in there, the accident health, the insurance, the warranty, any of those what's called aftermarket products in the finance and insurance office. And with a chuckle, he admitted, you know, Grant, I didn't buy any of the products. Well, why? I asked him why, and he's like, because I didn't want to spend the extra money on them. Well, the truth is, I told him, you didn't buy them because you're not sold on the products. The very products you're having difficulty selling, you're not selling. Why? Because you're not sold on them. You won't buy them. To the degree you won't buy them, you won't pay for them yourself. You won't commit yourself to paper. Dude, you're not sold. You bought the car. Why? Because you're sold on it. You even shine and gleam and become enthusiastic. You actually radiate. You actually made me want to buy that car. Why? Because you're sold, dude. You're sold. You put your money where your mouth is. You took actions. Now, you're not sold on your insurance, your warranty, your financing, whatever it is you do back there. And I'm not sure you know what you do back there because you're not selling much of it. And he's like, wow, man, maybe you're right. See, because he wasn't sold, he wasn't able to get others to buy the products from him. You might think, no, he's just saving money. No, BS. Look, if you're completely sold, you won't concern yourself with money. You'll buy the product. The truth is, he's more sold on his cash than he's sold on his products. And he's having trouble selling his products, which means he can't get a person's cash, which means he ends up with less money. There's no exception to this rule ever. If you are not completely sold, you won't concern yourself with money. If you are completely sold, you won't concern yourself with money. You get it? You'd buy the product. If the customer is not concerned with money, but wants the product more than the money, they'll do the deal. No exception to this rule ever. If you're ever having a similar problem in your own life or your career, it's an easy one to resolve, and it doesn't require that you learn anything actually about selling. All you have to do is start buying the products you sell and watch your sales go up. Buy the product, use the product, and watch your sales go up. People are inclined to do what others have already done. People will follow you to your chiropractor, your doctor, hire your maid or try to, go to the movie you recommended, all because you did it, not because you said it. To the degree you're sold, you will take action. And to the degree you take action is to the degree that you will be able to sell others. I assure you that finance guy I mentioned earlier would be much more successful if he were able to demonstrate to his clients through action through his actions that he'd already made the same exact investments himself, he would have been able to look a customer in the eye with full conviction and show them that he'd bought the finance, the credit life and accident and health. He'd bought the insurance. He'd bought the warranty. He protected himself because he believes in it. He could show them that he did it, that he'd put his money where his mouth was. And because of that, he was sold himself. By the way, this guy took my advice and his income increased 4 times by making that investment. The vital point. The vital point of having salespeople who are sold is missed by nearly 90% of all management. You go to any Apple store and ask the salespeople how much they like their products. The people are so sold, you'd think it's a religious movement. The Apple people aren't using PCs at home and selling apples during the day. You can feel it, man. You can feel it with the way they present their products. They know their products. Why? Because they're using them every day. I went to a very high-end steak restaurant recently and I asked the waitress, hey, which steak was your personal favorite? And she told me, hey, I'm a vegetarian. Hello? Is anyone home in management? What is this person doing in a steakhouse? Okay. Hey, man, go serve greenries at Whole Foods, but you don't belong at Martin's. And my wife's a vegetarian, but I wouldn't have her sell steaks in a steakhouse. I'm going to ask the question, and she can't say she eats the meat. I would never personally management hire a salesperson if they weren't willing to buy and use the products that we're selling. I also wouldn't hire a salesperson that wouldn't buy the product because he didn't have the money. You hear this? I hire a guy, he doesn't have the money, and that's the reason he won't buy it. Well, then borrow the money like the rest of the world. If he truly doesn't have the resources, get him a credit card, get him a payment plan, take it out of future commissions. Sell that product to him so that he can tell others how he loves it so much, uses it every day. They should have it, and they should also go into debt over it. That's selling. That's the vital point. Sell or be sold. Additionally, I wouldn't hire a salesperson that wouldn't spend money. Now, this is very important. If a person won't spend money or tends to be cheap or holds on to every penny, watches how he spends every little dollar, in my belief, he'll always have trouble getting money from other people because of his thought process. I assure you that the less hung up you are on money, tight, crunched down on, mooch-like, the less you are hung up on it, the easier money will come to you. I know of salespeople who are so tight, they still have the first quarter they made from a commission. And while they're good salespeople, they aren't great. They even go around bragging about it, about their frugality. I am convinced that they would have reached much, much higher income levels had they not been so tight, squeezing down on what they had or had already earned, because they'd have gone out and produced more had they been a little looser. If you're tight on money, you think everybody else is. See, if you won't buy it yourself, then you're not sold yourself. If you hold on to money, you're going to probably think other people should hold on to it tight because you think there's a shortage, a scarcity. You're sold on scarcity. If you can't pass the simple test of being willing to buy your product, go in debt for your product, suffer like you're asking other people to do, you will never be able to sell in numbers that will make you a great. You have power. When you're sitting at the closing table and you look a prospect dead in the eye and show him that you've already made the exact same purchase that you're asking him to make, your personal conviction and your believability will take your career to new heights when you're completely and fully sold. Buy the product yourself and you'll become a miracle closer. You will be able to handle objections that ordinary salespeople cannot handle. Be sold on the product. Be sold on the services. Be sold on your company. And watch your prospects turn into customers. Chapter 6, The Price Myth. It's almost never price. If you were to survey all the salespeople in the world, you'd find that most of them believe that the number one reason they lose a sale is because of price. This is absolutely not the case, and in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. Price is not the buyer's biggest concern. It is actually at the bottom of the list of reasons why people do not buy. Most sales are lost over unspoken objections, not the obvious and apparent objections like price, payments, or budgets, but the ones that the buyer never voices. Getting the sale is never about money. It's ultimately about the buyer having confidence that the product is the right product for them. If there's a price difference, the customer wants assurance that your product has advantages in excess of the cost to them. The price experiment. You know, most salespeople believe that if price was lower, they could sell more product. But the truth is, they wouldn't sell more because they haven't correctly named the problem, therefore can't get the correct solution. I once had a salesperson that said to me, "Grant, if the price of our seminar tickets were lower, we would be able," particularly him, he thought he would be able to sell twice as many. Well, even though I knew that what he was saying was bordering on idiotic, I practiced the first rule of selling, which is always agree with your prospect. And I told him that I had often wondered the same thing, and in fact, I said I'd be willing to test out his theory. So we offered a Grant Cardone seminar in Detroit, Michigan, with tickets at 1/10 of the normal price. Now, Detroit had always been one of our best attended seminar markets, and the person that had made the suggestion about price cut was thinking, "Oh my gosh, we'll have the biggest audience we've ever had." Well, there was only one stipulation to our little deal here so that we could properly test out his idea, and that was he could only sell the tickets by sending out a marketing piece offering the seminar, the date, the price, the website address, and a phone number to call. That means he couldn't actually sell the product. He was not allowed to do a full sales presentation in order for us to test out this pricing experiment. The reality is, if you take the price down that low, okay, you won't be able to afford to do a presentation anyway because there's not going to be enough room in the price for a commission to be paid. Well, let me tell you how it turned out. That seminar had the lowest attendance of any seminar I have given in 20 years. It didn't even cover the cost of my airfare, and the salesperson's commission didn't cover the cost of the mailers. When I showed up in Detroit, I asked the audience, "Hey, why do you think so few people came to this?" It was like 12 people in the seminar. And they said they didn't think I'd actually be there in person, but that it would be a video feed. I asked them, "Why did you think it'd be a video feed?" The brochure said Grant Cardone will be here. And they said, "Well, because of the price of the ticket, we didn't think you could afford to be here." See, if the price gets too cheap, people won't see any value in the product and therefore not respond to that product. Additionally, if price alone were the reason people buy, then the company wouldn't really need salespeople. And that'd be a problem for 25% of the population on planet Earth. See, it will always take a professional salesperson that takes the time to sell features and benefits to handle the buyer's price objections and get the buyer to make a decision, to take action, to exchange money for the product. Look, it's love. It's never price. After the experiment with the cheap tickets, I doubled the original ticket price, and attendance at my seminars doubled. That means I doubled the ticket price, and our seminar ticket sales increased by over 100%. Price is almost never the issue for any buyer, even when they say it's price. More often than not, it is love and confidence. Do I love this product? Because if I love this product, if I do truly love it, then I'll do whatever it takes to get it. Is the buyer 100% totally in confident that this product will get them what they want? Will this service do the job? If the buyer is head over heels in love with the product, can't live without the product, he'll buy it regardless of price, assuming he can find the money to pay for it. If the buyer has full confidence that the product will solve his problems and get him real solutions, he'll buy it at almost any price. And I'll prove it to you. See, people will give their right arm for love. They'll give their last dollar for a real solution. For instance, if you've ever lost someone, then you know what I'm talking about right now. Immediately, I said, you lost somebody. You know what I'm talking about. In that moment, in that very moment of losing someone you love, and you'd found out that you'd lost this someone special, you'd sell everything you had and go into debt multiple lifetimes just to have that person back in your life. Why? Love. Love, baby, love. See, you have to get your buyer to want your product more than he wants his money. I'm going to say that again. You have to get your buyer, prospect, whoever you're pitching your deal to want your product, your service, your solution more than he wants his money. He's got to want the product or the solution more than he wants the numbers in his bank account. Discovering what he's trying to accomplish and demonstrating how your product or service or you solve that problem is the essence of how you close a deal. Certainly there's the issue of the product being out of someone's price range, but that's the point I'm trying to drive home. If they really love it, and it will really solve their problem. They'll figure out a way to come up with the money if they're absolutely in love with the product and confident it will solve their problem. You can't put a price tag on someone or something you really love. It's priceless. And if you've ever had a serious problem in life, money wasn't your concern. Getting rid of the problem becomes your concern, and you'd pay anything to get rid of it. Give them love, solve a problem, and you'll get the money. I'll give you an example. You ever stand in line for, you're thirsty, you're dying of thirst, or you need a coffee or whatever you need, and you have to stand in line, what would you pay to get in front of the line? 1970, oil crisis in America. Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, they had a lottery. You know, you'd get your day to go buy gas. Tell me you wouldn't have paid $4 then. You would have. Why? Because you'd rather the $4 be gone than the time that you had to wait in line. Give them love, solve a problem, you'll get the money. If the customer can afford the product or service, but isn't buying and is harping about the money, I always realize that he has other concerns other than money that must be handled. Because if he were completely sold, price would not be the issue. While your prospect may be objecting to your price or your terms, here is a partial list of what else he might be considering. Is this the right product for me? Is there a better product than this? Is this the right proposal? Will this truly solve my problems? Will my people use this product? What will others think of me if I actually do this? Is this something I'm going to really use and enjoy? Will this company really take care of me? Will they really be there to service us? Am I better off buying something else? Will something better come out next week? Do I even know enough yet? Do we have all the information? Should we get another proposal, X proposal instead? Should I join the country club rather than spending this money on this whatever? Am I better off with the money in the bank, the security of money in the bank, than using the money and having this thing, this product, this equipment, or whatever? Is this going to be a mistake like other past decisions I made? Man, that's a huge one. See, all these questions, this list of questions, could be on the mind of your prospect and will stop the sale from taking place. Reduce the price, you still haven't answered these questions that are being unspoken. If these considerations, or when these considerations, are handled to your prospect's satisfaction, price will no longer be the issue. The price or service, or whatever it is you're selling, will obviously create different concerns for the decision maker. But trust me, regardless of what it is you have, it almost never comes down to just price. To the degree that you understand this, you will be successful. Let's say a guy is buying a birthday present for the love of his life. He finds something he thinks the girl will love, but tells the salesperson, hey, look, it just costs more than we can afford. I can't afford it. It's not in my budget. What he's actually saying is that he isn't completely sold on the product being the perfect gift for her. He either doesn't love it for himself, or he's not sure that it's something she will love. This product is not yet making him feel good enough or certain enough to pull the trigger, buy the gift, and get rid of the money. Right? See, he still loves his money more than he loves this solution. In this case, I would acknowledge him, tell him, hey man, I totally understand. I know that it's more than you want to spend, but ask him for the right to actually show him something a bit more expensive, just for fun. You get it? He said it was too much. He didn't say he didn't like it, and he didn't say he couldn't do it. He said it was too much. Also consider that when he said it was too much, couldn't he have meant that it was too much for that? Rather than, I can't afford it, or I can't do it, or I won't do it. Maybe, just maybe, he'd rather spend extra money, get the gift he knows he will love and she will love. This is called move up, don't move down. Most salespeople make the mistake of offering something for a lower price when faced with price objections. This is an absolute incorrect solution based on the false belief that price is the reason people don't buy things. See, when you move a customer down in price is a way to solve the problem. Watch, when you move the customer down in price or offer him something cheaper, he's actually less likely to want the next product, the down product, the solution, a price objection. He's less likely to want this product if he didn't want the first one. This will then cause the buyer to think you have no solution and that he's just wasting his time shopping with you. Remember the little test? Hey, let's just look at this instead, you know? Even though I know, by moving him up rather than down in inventory, you'll actually get him thinking in terms of value and find out whether his price objection is valid or not. If he believes that his girl will love the gift and he really wants to make her happy, I'm assuming he really wants to make her happy or he wouldn't have come in here, then showing him something more expensive will actually get you closer to a sale. Remember, more than anything else, he wants to make a good decision. At this point, he'll either demonstrate that the first product was the wrong choice by the simple fact that he's now looking at the more expensive option, or he'll tell you that he needs to move in the other direction with something that costs less. Either way, you've got him shopping with you, not negotiating with you. I could even show him a completely different line or product, knowing that he can or we can always move him back to the original. See, I want to exhaust my inventory and choices. I don't want to exhaust my price. That's what most people do. They exhaust price and end up not making any money. Remember, the number one reason a business fails or an individual fails is the inability to capitalize themselves because they were unable to sell products in quantities great enough at speeds fast enough. And price is an integral part of that calculation. I remember a customer once told me that my product was too much money and I was unable to close him because of that. He left me and bought a product. He actually sold me that the price was too much, left me and bought a product for $150,000 more than I was offering him and did it for my competitor. And I had the same product. I could have sold him for the extra 150 grand. See, when he told me it was too much money, he was really saying it's too much money for the solution you're offering me. And I bought it. I just bought half of it. It's too much money. I didn't hear the other part. It's too much money for that solution. I'd rather pay more money and get the real solution. See, you'll discover that as many of your price objections will be solved with more expensive solutions as are solved with lower prices. So today, when I can't close a deal, I always try to move the buyer up to bigger or more expensive products or solutions as the first solution to the price objection. Although this may not make immediate sense to you and actually be contrary to your thinking, I assure you that it will prove successful for you as it has thousands of other salespeople. If they'll at least consider the more expensive option, I know I'm on the right product line and that they're still in question about it. See, this is called closing with inventory. It means price is not the objection. Love and solution are the problem. I've had thousands of customers tell me that it's either too much money, over their budget, or they can get that uncomfortable money look on their face. You know what that's like? You know that cringe, I can't do this. See, I'll immediately move that buyer up to a more expensive product. Why? Because they're telling me it's too much money for that product or service, or they're not sure that product will solve their problem. The truth is, the buyer would rather pay more and make the right decision than pay less and make a mistake. The buyer would rather pay more and get a solution than pay less and get partial solution. The buyer would rather pay extra for quality than less for quality. They know they're going to have to give up some quality. Every customer has made mistakes before, and this is the number one reason why they hesitate on making decisions today. It's not price. It's not payments, budgets. It's never money. It's this. Number one reason I hesitate is because I don't want to make another mistake. It is the fear of repeating a mistake. It is not the fear of spending money. It is the angst of making the wrong choice or buying the wrong product or making the wrong decision that doesn't create a solution that they were looking for more than the price itself. Always show your buyer, your prospect, in your proposal, always show them how they can spend more as a solution to price, and this will determine whether or not you're dealing with a real price objection. The worst outcome is that the more expensive product will make the one you're looking at, or them looking at, more accessible to them, mentally more accessible, more affordable, and more valuable. And this will actually build value and substantiate your price. Never buy into the talk of the mediocre average salesperson that you're surrounded with who believe that price is the most important issue, or promote this idea that if the price were lower, oh, we could sell more products. Just look at their results and then disregard their advice. One time a charity asked me if I'd help out with some fundraising. They told me about this one prospect. He had the wherewithal to make a sizable donation, but they didn't have the wherewithal to get the donation from him. He was very supportive of the charity, but they were having trouble getting him to make a contribution. They had been working with this individual for over a year and had never gotten a penny. I asked them immediately, well, how much money are you asking him to donate? And they said, we're asking him to make a donation of $10,000. We've even asked him for $5,000 and can't get it. $2,000 and can't get it. $1,000 and can't get it. My suggestion was, hey, why don't you ask for more money? Maybe you're asking for too little. Maybe this prospect doesn't like the idea of small contributions. Maybe he believes the small contribution can't actually make a difference. And that's why people are charitable anyway. They want to make a difference. That it might actually be easier to get a larger one than a smaller one. The woman that had been working with this individual looked at me with like disbelief, like, who are you? She said to me, this man is one of the cheapest people I have ever tried to get a contribution from. So I took the prospect. I said, give me 5 minutes with him. Let me see what I can do with him. You've been destroying him for a year. I took the prospect aside, and in 10 minutes, 12 at the most, he had contributed 10 times what they had been asking him to do for over a year. He gave $100,000, not $10,000. So the truth is, he wasn't cheap by any means, except in the mind of the fundraisers. In fact, he was one of the most generous people I've ever met and one of the easiest closes I've ever been with. You know, the guy told me, he said, Grant, I hadn't contributed in the past to this charity because I didn't feel the $10,000 would actually make a difference. See, all I did was ask him for the right amount that he believed would solve a problem, which was make a difference. The higher contribution solved his problem. He wasn't getting a product. He's trying to solve a problem. Tip, your prospect is never the problem. Never. Your customer is never the problem. Never. The people you're pitching, proposing to, the company, the board is never the problem. Never. Salespeople are the ultimate barrier to every sale. Never the prospect. Salespeople stop sales. Customers don't. You have to get this into your head. Price is not your problem. You are your problem. Customers don't stop sales. Salespeople stop sales from happening. You are the barrier to a closed deal, never a customer. Give the prospect a product he loves, a service that will solve his problems, and you will get a close once he has full confidence in the product, in the service, and in you. I'm going to say that again. Give the prospect a product that he loves or a service that will solve his problems, and you will get the close once he has full confidence in the product, the service, and in you. There'll be times when you'll have to handle the buyer on money. Sometimes I remind a person, while I agree it's a lot of money for a gift, let's say he's buying a gift for his wife or her for the husband, while I agree it's a lot of money for a gift, there's no shortage of money on this planet. But there is a shortage of people who found love of their life and who knew how to show appreciation for that person. Be grateful you have someone to love, sir. Now, how would you like to handle this? See, that's selling. See, he said price was too high. And I'm like, I'm with you. I totally agree with you. First rule of selling, always agree. And I agree it's a lot of money for a gift. There's no shortage, however, of money on this planet. There is, however, a shortage of people who found the love of their life and who know how to show appreciation for that person. Be grateful you have someone to love. See, that'll handle that deal. That's selling, folks. And that's what you're going to learn throughout the remainder of this book. If the buyer is totally convinced it's right, they will chew off their own foot to have the product. If the buyer who's saying it's too much money found out that he had a disease and was going to die, but that product would save his life, would he do it? Oh, he'd find the money, he'd buy the product and save his life. Why? Because he's completely sold on the need. Wouldn't be about price, it'd be about solving his life. If the need is important enough and he has confidence in the cure, if the love is great enough, price will not be the issue. When buying a house, for instance, the unspoken objection the realtor will not hear will be, is this the right house? Is this the house that's going to fulfill our needs? Will we be happy here? Is this going to be a good investment? Do I really love this place? Can we do better? If we're going to spend this much money, why don't we spend a little more and get our dream house? That one goes on a lot. The last one, regarding let's spend more money, happens to be about 50% of all buyers who are ever concerned about price. Those same buyers who use price as an objection, this is too much, will often go out and spend even more money, not less money. Remember, many times when a buyer says it's too much money, what they're saying is, it's too much for this product. it's too much for this solution. I'm not convinced this will really make me feel different. It won't solve our problem. You know, I told you a story about a house I sold for 50% more than the realtor said it could ever possibly bring. When the buyer came to the house, I knew the moment she walked into the house that she loved it. Later, she insisted, 3 days later, after we had a contract, she's like, Grant, I want to get an appraisal done because my account manager, her finance person, said I'm paying too much for the house and we need to get an appraisal. I explained to her that while I understood she wanted an appraisal and that the account person wanted an appraisal, it would be a complete waste of money and time because the house would not appraise for the price we had agreed on. I told her that the house was overpriced, and because of the overpriced, it wouldn't appraise. I know this sounds crazy, but this is the way to handle this. I went on to tell her that I'd paid too much for the house when I bought it. She's like, what? I said, I paid too much for the house when I bought it. Oh, by the way, the people that bought it before me, they also paid too much for the house when they bought it. And by the way, you're going to pay too much for the house when you buy it for me. And when you go sell it, they're going to pay too much when they buy it. And I promise you, it will never appraise. Because the location, this location has always sold for more money than this house will ever appraise for. It always has and it always will. And that's what makes this house incredible. That's what makes the location great. And that's why so many people have overpaid for this house and it won't appraise. I convinced her not to do the appraisal to save her money and save the time. And we closed the deal. The buyer decided not to have it appraised and bought the house. Again, she lived there for about a year and a half maybe, and sold it to the next people for how much money? Too much. It's never price, folks. It's about love. It's about confidence. And it's about, will this solve my problem? Now I want to talk about $4 coffee and $2 water to further tell you it's never price. To be an effective salesperson, you have to believe in human beings. You have to believe in the human being. You need to have a positive outlook about people. You have to believe that people are good and that they want to make the right decision. Your buyers are just like you. Your buyers, they're like you. They spend money they don't have. Don't you do that? They go over budget. You do that. They work hard for their money. You do that. They've made good decisions. You've done that. And they've made bad decisions. And hey, you've done that. And when you've made enough bad ones, you want to avoid them. See, like you, they want to avoid bad decisions and they want to make good ones. People want to feel good about themselves and they want to feel good about their decisions. If you're selling a service to a business owner, he wants to know that he did the right thing for his business. And that what he paid for, what you sold him, is going to make a difference for his company. If you're selling a product, customers want to have certainty that they'll be happy with that product. And that when they use it, they're going to feel good, look good, and be admired by others because of the choice they made. If people don't buy from you, I assure you it's almost never about the money, never about the budget, but about something you didn't uncover. If it were all about price, please explain to me, please, why people stand in line for a $4 cup of coffee when they can make an entire pot at their house for almost nothing. Explain to me why people spend $2 on bottled water when they could have got it from their tap for free. Do you know last year in the United States, $18 billion was spent on bottled water? Explain why someone spends thousands of dollars on season tickets to a ball game when they could have watched on TV for nothing. Explain why someone would go out and buy a sports car when they could take the subway to work and arrive there in half the time. Explain why you bring your kid to a professional when he cuts himself rather than stitching him up yourself for nothing. Love, baby. Love. Consider how many times you paid more than you could afford and you loved it. Come on, how many times have you been over budget? Consider how many times in your life you went over budget because you found something that you weren't even looking for, you didn't even need, and decided to buy it on an impulse. Remember, it's almost never price. Chapter 7, Your Buyer's Money. Remember this, there is no shortage of money. I mentioned this earlier. You need to write it down. No shortage of money. Wake up every morning and tell you there's no shortage of money. You know, before you ask customers for their money, there's something you need to get straight about the subject of money. Millions of people on this planet have this false idea that there's some kind of money shortage. But the truth of the matter is, there's more than enough money to go around for everybody. In fact, there are massive surpluses on it. And anytime we run short, they just go print more. Do you know that there's enough money circulating on this planet for every human being on this planet to have a net worth of over $1 billion? That's right, $1 billion. Are you getting your share? If you're not, it's because you're thinking in terms of hard work and limits, scarcity, not abundance. Look at the Pacific Ocean, or the Atlantic, or whatever ocean you're close to. Go take a look at it. Observe the infinite amount of energy being created there. The Pacific Ocean never stops. Go out there and get as many buckets of water as you want. How many buckets can you take? If you took as many buckets as you wanted, would there still be plenty of ocean? Would anybody even know you took a bucket out? No. Nobody would know anything happened. Absolutely nothing would happen. So, what's the point of that? Look at how much money is in the marketplace. How many people own homes, cars, pay telephones? Look around you while you were listening to this audio program. Just start counting cars. 30 grand, 20 grand, 10,000, 14,000. Count them. Imagine how many telephone bills are processed every month. Electric bills, water bills. How many people buy clothes and food every day? How many Visa card charges every minute of every day? There are endless amounts of money on this planet. And if we ever get close to running out, I promise you, they'll go and print more and they'll drop it out of planes if necessary. Get over the idea that there's a scarcity of money, because there is not. This is in your mind. There's plenty of money to go around. If you start looking for prosperity and abundance, you will see it. You will see it everywhere. It exists all around you. Alert. If others have a difficult time getting money from you, you will never find it easy to get money from others. This is an alert, 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 okay? If others have a difficult time getting money from you, you will never find it easy to get money from others. Many of the best, highest paid salespeople I have known in my lifetime are the most generous, some of the most generous people I have ever met when they go buy things. They go in, they spend it, they tip it, they throw it down, they take care of the people. See, they're less significant about money, not because they have it, but because they understand that money is to be used, not possessed. That money is abundant, not scarce. Because they know this, they don't have trouble getting others to part with money. Your buyer and his money. You know, your buyer becomes quite funny when it comes to the decision time and to exchanging you money for the product or service or whatever the pitch is. It's as if the money somehow identifies the individual, or that they feel they'll be different once they give it to someone else. When it comes to actually parting with money, people can act quite strange and start making excuses. They generate odd stories even, and may even possibly alter the truth a bit. Maybe you've noticed this. The trained professional knows how to stay in the transaction, in the deal. He knows how to handle the objections, knows how to handle the stalls, knows how to persist, and can do so without ever appearing to pressure anyone. It's even funnier when you consider that most people aren't even giving you money. They're merely transferring numbers from a bank account to some other bank account. In most cases, they aren't even paying for it. Someone else is. It's called credit. But they say, oh, I can't afford this. Well, of course you can't afford it. That's why we have banks. That's how you handle it. Man, I sure like this. I love this. I want this. I like the idea. But I can't afford it. Well, of course you can't. Who can? No one can, man. That's why we have banks. That's why people borrow money. I've had many people tell me that my price was too high, and it wasn't even their money. I've talked to boards where I have three people that can't even write a check. Tell me, oh, it's too much money. Then I actually got the actual money guy, the actual decision maker, the principal. He gets involved. I pitch my deal. I present my proposal. I tell him what my solution is. I sell my product. He looks at me and says, how much? I tell him how much. And he says, okay, let's do it. Never, ever brought up price. But his henchmen did. See, some of the most difficult buyers I've ever had that I've been involved with later thanked me profusely, profusely for hanging in there with them, working through these price issues, these decision-making issues, these fears that people have about money, and helping them make the right decision. Love your product, love your service, love your customer, and love yourself enough to learn how to hard sell. If you need some help handling these price objections, payments, budgets, decision makers, you should get my other audio program on closing called The Closer's Almanac. It is a lethal arsenal of technology that will change your life, about how to stay with the money, handle the objection, not discount your price, maybe even be more expensive than everybody else on the street or that compares to you, and still get a deal. Okay, here's a little thing you want to learn. Second money. It's called second money is easier than first money. I discovered the second money phenomenon by accident 1 week when I was on fire selling everybody that I called on. You know what I'm talking about? When you're in that zone and you're just, everything's going my way. I'm selling everybody. It's one of those freak moments when everything was easy and effortless, like the skies had parted and the gods had blessed me with every closing ability available to mankind. Every prospect I was working with in this time was buying from me like wham, deal, wham, deal, deal. And it seemed as though I had walked through this magic closing portal in the universe. I'd spent hours selling this executive that I was working with to make sense of the product being affordable for his company. He finally submitted to my logic and my persuasion and agreed to make the purchase. Well, upon delivery of that product, I decided to see if I could move them up another level, as I truly believed that it would be a better investment for the company. And hey, look, I was such in the zone that day, I could afford to take the risk. You know, I'm winning. Winning breeds confidence. Confidence gets sales. More sales breeds more confidence. I can take this risk. So I went for the second money. You know, I knew these people were already on a budget. In fact, had gone over a budget. But I had to try this anyway because I felt like a Superman, super Hancock sales guy. I suggested to them that since they were already paying more than they could or be comfortable with, why not go all the way and move up to another level? The guy looked at me like I was crazy. I thought it was crazy, but it was actually astonishment. Actually, he says, we were going to ask you to do just that. You know, we figured and talked about it and agreed we're already paying more than we can afford. We'll just have to produce a little more to make it work out, but we'd rather move up to the next package because we believe it'll last us longer and we want the changes. In that moment, I had stumbled across one of the great secrets of selling. Second money is easier to get than first money. Well, startled by this discovery, I reflected on other times that I had been out shopping myself for products, and I had taken forever to decide on one particular item, whatever, a shirt, CD player, an iPod, whatever, a TV, right? But then I finally made the decision, no help from the salesperson in most cases, and I finally made this decision and bought it. And then I found myself buying another 8 items on the way out the store. It was interesting because I'm trying to be aware of what's happening to people when they're spending money. Here I am, an hour and a half to make a decision on one product, and then in the next 10 minutes, buy 8 more products. This phenomenon is common among decision makers and consumers. It's something like once the flow begins, the buyer becomes, or the individual becomes more susceptible or open to more purchase. It is my belief that this individual is actually using the second and follow-up purchases to support the rightness of the first decision. Now, I'm in Los Angeles today. That explains why Hollywood will tend to stay with the same actors over and over again. Why? We did a show with her. It was a success. Let's use her again. I get on one radio show. The next week, I got 10 other people that want me on a radio show. Why? Because second sale. It's been supported. Let's have him back. If we have him back again, it'll support our decision to have him the first time. See, why does someone refer you to his or her dentist? Why? They go to a dentist. The dentist inflicts pain, charges a lot of money for it, and then they come home, you gotta go see my dentist. My dentist is incredible, right? Why? To help the dentist? I don't think so. Maybe, but more likely, the individual, you gotta go see my dentist. He's trying to convince you to go to the same dentist because it supports the rightness of his decision to go to that dentist. See, everyone wants to know what they're doing is the right thing. And the other purchase phenomenon, the second purchase phenomenon, supports the earlier action and gives the reassurance that what this individual did was correct. I'll prove this point to you. Find one woman walking down Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills carrying just one shopping bag, and my entire theory is supported. I dare you to find that. Another example of this is a customer who walks into a travel agency. Maybe it's you walking into the travel agency with the idea of taking a cruise. You spend 4 hours with the travel agent looking at all the cruise line brochures while trying to figure out what package will best suit your needs. Should I go to Europe, Mexico, Alaska, or the Caribbean? Should I take 5-day cruise or 2-week cruise? What's the best cruise line? Who has the best ships? Once the customer, or you in this case, decide on the destination and actually purchase the perfect cruise vacation, the climate is set perfectly for the travel agent, if they're trained correctly, as a great to step in, because they're not travel agents, they're salespeople, and offer additional products. See, there's accommodation upgrades from an inside deck cabin to an ocean view suite, the island tour excursion package you got to do. You need travel insurance. What about airfare upgrades?